Good evening and welcome to Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, July 19, 2024. Residents of Malakal town are indoors following an attack by gangs on a Sosa residential area.
According to the person that I talked to, who witnessed the situation, they said these people went and they killed a man and they shot him in the head.
And weather experts warn that looming floods could affect families in South Sudan's capital, Juba.
Juba is likely to have over 80,000 people affected in lower grounds and along the Nile, especially Gondogoro Island. And these are the areas that we expect that a lot of intervention is required.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Tensions have gripped the Upper Nile state capital, Malakal, following the news of a killing of a man in the town. Residents are indoors, shops are closed, and streets are empty. Our reporter in Malakal, Mamer Abraham Kwart, tells me the situation could turn into ethnic clashes because of rampant culture of revenge killings in South Sudan.
The afternoon at around 12, some three men came riding on a boda-boda. They went to a residential area called Atosa. According to the person that I talked to, who witnessed the situation, they said these people went and they killed a man. And they shot him in the head. And the witnesses said that the man was bleeding so much. And he was taken, he was brought to this MSF hospital. I cannot access actually the hospital right now. But the situation, as I speak right now, the market is closed down. There's nobody in the market. And most of the people are being asked by the soldiers and the police to stay indoors. And those who are staying in the POC are leaving, going to POC.
What about the situation of the residents at Asosa, yes, where the gangs allegedly killed a man or shot a man? What is happening at Asosa? What are you hearing?
Yeah, as we speak right now, everything is calm there. Even within the Malakal town, everything is calm because these people rent Malakal town. And it's not yet clear whether they have already been caught and they are arrested or not. And I can see right now, as I speak right now, the police and the other forces are patrolling the street. And you can only see only a few people moving on the street. And those in Asosa are saying it is calm there.
You said you were going to the hospital to find out if this man who was allegedly attacked is alive or dead. Have you been able to get into the hospital?
Yes. As I speak right now, I'm in the hospital, but the Malakal Teaching Hospital, these bodies, I mean the body of the person who was attacked. Many people are saying that he is dead, but I cannot confirm it because I came to Malakal Teaching Hospital. Dr. Kat, who is in charge, is not here, and I was told that the person who are injured in that place have been taken to MSF Hospital. As I speak right now, I don't have access to MSF Hospital as I speak right now.
This is not the first time Malakal is going through violence or skirmishes. What is the problem with the residents of the town? Why are they on each other's necks?
Majorly, this is the conflict that is there right now. Like what happened, I think, was it last month or a few months back? And what has happened today, it is being blamed on the gang. Sometimes on the bank, when they take some drugs, they sometimes attack each other. And at some point, it may go beyond, the thing being between them. It may go, quite some time and may cause a lot of disorder. And, many people here are afraid of, they are tired of the conflict. Whenever they hear something, you find people running here and there, always afraid of this. So what happened actually today was not so much. It was not something that could actually cause the market, because the gangs could easily be traced and be arrested. But it was unfortunate that it did not happen like that because nobody knows right now whether they have been taken or not. And people are just afraid. So people are indoors right now because of this. So it is majorly the gangs that are causing a lot of problems in town. And at some point, it may escalate to, you know, to be something new. Yeah, but mainly it is the gangs that are causing this.
And what about the UN peacekeepers who are in Malakal? I mean, the UN mission in South Sudan changed its mandate to civilian protection as opposed to peacekeeping. You were telling me you can see police and soldiers on the streets. Have you seen any UN patrol on the streets?
Only a few UN vehicles, but I cannot see the peacekeepers moving around. Most of the time, the peacekeepers are always based in the POC, and Malakal town and these areas around it are always being controlled by the army. These are the joint operations. These are the ones that are actually normally controlling the market and the town and the areas around it. I do not see the peacekeepers in Malakal town. Only in few cases, that's when they come out, but they are always based there protecting the POC and those other areas.
That's Mamer Abraham Kwart, freelance journalist in Malakal. He spoke with me earlier today. We apologize for that poor quality line from Zain Telecommunication in South Sudan. Some residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, are calling on the government to help them during rainy seasons because of poor drainage system in the city. Many of the residents say they are living in water whenever it rains, cutting access to food, medicine and movement. South Sudan's government's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says there is no money for providing services to families affected by rains. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Torrential rains pounded parts of the South Sudan's capital, Juba, over the past week, affecting families in Gurei, Joppa, Munuki, Tomping, Miasaba, and Hairifrenda. Agnes Pony, a resident of Mangaten suburb who works in Miasaba residential area, says there is no bridge linking the area to other parts of the city.
I have to cross that road and you see now the road is just running. There's no trenches, and the problem is it's like these people, they're huge and they're weak. Because some of them, you can come accidentally, you see someone just flying, falling down like that.
Kwan Lultar, a local chief in Miasaba, says his people are trapped in the houses with no food, medication, and poor sanitation. He says he wrote several letters to Luripayam and Juba County asking for help.
We are here in Miasaba. We can't go to Hairifrenda. The way to reach there is not there. This water has brought a lot of destruction. It has carried some houses and it's a terrible situation. My message is to the government of South Sudan is to take care of its people. They should look at their citizens as important so that they can live in happiness. It's not good to stay hungry, sick, and stay inside water over a minor issue.
Santino Ball is the deputy chairperson of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in South Sudan. He says several people are likely to suffer because of a looming flooding and increased water levels at Lake Victoria.
Juba is likely to have over 80,000 people affected in lower grounds and along the Nile, especially Gondogoro Island. And these are the areas that we expect that a lot of intervention is required. So RRC is on standby. We have already triggered our local arrangements. Our task forces are in place, which are working with the state authorities to map the higher grounds for possible evacuations when people will get their location submerged.
Chol Turuk, the head of public health department at Juba Teaching Hospital, warns that if the situation is not addressed, it will cause an outbreak of cholera and other waterborne diseases.
All this water are going to the river, and then this water is too contaminated with the feces. At the end, we can drink from the river because there are some vehicles that can take water direct from the river, and then they will begin selling it to our community.
Ball says the alarming humanitarian situation in the country requires urgent funding from both the government government and partners to intervene and support families affected by heavy rains and flooding across the country.
We had appealed last year over $1.7 billion for humanitarian response. As we speak now, only 20% of that amount has been collected, which is definitely a very low amount.
According to UN OCHA, heavy rains and flash floods have affected thousands of people in Kenya, Burundi, and Tanzania, while torrential rains caused floods and affected people in parts of the country. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Geneva, where the UN mediated ceasefire talks to de-escalate the conflict in Sudan and provide humanitarian aid to millions of people in distress have ended without any tangible results. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
After more than a week of so-called proximity talks with representatives of Sudan's two warring parties, the UN mediator, Ramtane Lamamra, has come up empty-handed. But that was not for lack of trying. UN spokesperson in Geneva, Alessandra Vellucci, says Lamamra, the personal envoy of the Secretary General, and his team held around 20 sessions with rival delegations of the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces.
As you know, these were parallel talks, so engaging with one party at a time. The personal envoy is encouraged by the willingness of the delegations to engage with him on critical matters related to the situation in Sudan, on which he seeks the necessary cooperation of the warring parties.
The UN mediators have been shuttling between the two delegations since July 11th, urging them to de-escalate the conflict in and around El Fasher, the capital of North Darfur state, where some 800,000 people are at risk. They also have been trying to reach an accord to allow unfettered humanitarian access to people throughout the country and to protect civilians who are at increasing risk from the escalating conflict. Conditions in Sudan have been deteriorating since the conflict erupted in mid-April 2023. The United Nations reports nearly 19,000 people have been killed and 33,000 injured. Almost 13 million have been forced to flee their homes, with large numbers crossing the border into Sudan's neighbors. Vellucci says the personal envoy considers the discussions held in Geneva to be an encouraging initial step in a longer and complex process.
He now counts on the parties to promptly translate their willingness to engage with him into tangible progress on the ground, both in the implementation of existing agreements and through possible unilateral commitments.
In a statement at the end of the meeting, UN mediator Lamamra said the humanitarian situation in Sudan was catastrophic and deteriorating every day. He welcomed the commitments announced today by one of the two parties to enhance humanitarian assistance and the protection of civilians. He did not identify the party in question. He said he intended to remain in close contact with the leadership of the two parties to follow up on the implementation of commitments and to engage them on critical issues. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, global computer outage hits broadcast industries, hospitals around the world. Find out why after the break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. An information technology outage across the globe has caused major disruptions at airlines and other travel spots, as well as banks, hospitals, and even food chains like McDonald's. Underscoring the world's increasing dependence on computers, some airlines and other services were forced to switch to manual operations. Microsoft has attributed the glitch to an update to an antivirus program, explaining further on its website that the problems affected users of its Azure cloud platform running the cybersecurity software CrowdStrike Falcon. Christopher Painter, an associate fellow at the International Security Program for Chatham House, explained what happened. Painter said Microsoft pushed out an update as part of its system, but it was updating this computer security software, and there was a glitch in the code in the update that then caused all computers to crash. The problem stretched from the United States to Africa and beyond. Operations slowly, steadily began resuming several hours after they began. Painter said fixing the problem requires manual resets, a very tedious procedure that could take few days. In North America, major airlines, including Delta, United, and American, grounded all their planes early Friday due to what the Federal Aviation Administration called communication issues. More than 1,400 flights were canceled across the United States, with nearly 4,000 delayed. As of mid-morning, that's according to data tracker FlightAware. The IT outage also affected London Stock Exchange, delaying the opening of the TSE 100, its main index, by about 20 minutes. Just a week before the opening of the Olympics, the organizing committee said IT outage was impacting the Paris 2024's operations. Recent internet outages in sub-Saharan Africa due to underwater cable failures have highlighted the continent's reliance on single-path connectivity. The disruption in March and May have caused problems for people accessing online banking, communication delays, and interrupted businesses across many countries. Experts say Africa needs to invest in a robust infrastructure if the continent is to have a reliable internet. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
One Thursday in March on the west coast of West Africa, four submarine cables that deliver the internet to at least 17 African countries went offline, disrupting communications, businesses and services in the region. Less than 2 months later, internet outages were experienced in eastern and southern Africa when two undersea cables were damaged. In Tanzania, the United States Embassy in Dar es Salaam closed for 2 days due to the disruption. Ben Gumu is a businessman who relies on the internet to sell clothes, shoes and children's wares. He says he lost business during the disruption in Kenya.
Loss of clients, because in the process you are trying to like make a deal with someone, he puts stuff in the basket, but because of the outage, he cannot complete the sale, so he cancels. So in a way, it actually affected ourselves, updating of the page. You realize you've got new products, but you cannot update them. So when clients visit your site, they still find the old stock.
Some countries were able to stay online, though service was slow and not stable because internet service providers and telecommunication carriers had invested in more than one international connection. According to the telecommunications research company TeleGeography, over 100 cable cuts occur globally each year. Experts blame the outages on undersea volcanic activities, rockfalls, recent rainfall, and strong currents in rivers. The currents in some rivers are much stronger than when some of the cables were built and deployed. Man-made activities also caused disruptions. According to one report, a ship was attacked in the Red Sea, started to drift, and its anchor pulled up three underwater cables. Mike Last works with the West Indian Ocean Cable Company, which operates in 20 African countries and has built 36 data centers across three African markets. He says recent disruptions made officials and business people recognize the need for better internet infrastructure.
What it's made people realize is that you have to invest in reliable network. You have to invest in redundancy. We've seen a real boom in clients coming to us wanting connectivity on the new subsea systems. Whereas in the past, they might have put that decision off another 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. Now they're coming to us to take that connectivity now. So I think it's really brought home to people that investing in resilience and reliability is important.
According to the World Bank, sub-Saharan Africa's digital infrastructure coverage, access and quality are still far behind those of other regions. However, Africa is embracing the digital future. According to the submarine cable networks, 37 countries have at least one subsea cable connection and 20 countries have more than two subsea cables. Last says the planned laying of cables by Google and Meta will improve connectivity.
Well, the Equiano cable is a new cable. It's a very, very high capacity cable routed in a different way to bring more protection and more diversity. There's another new cable being built right now all the way around Africa. It's called To Africa. It was led by Meta, Facebook. Again, a number of operators are fiber pair owners in that cable. That means we own a very, very significant amount of capacity. And again, it's routed differently to all of the existing cables. It's bringing a lot more capacity to Africa, and that will help.
Experts warn disparities in connectivity across Africa are expected, but the development of infrastructure, government policies, and private sector investments can accelerate growth. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move back to the United States, where some leading Democrats pressure incumbent President Joe Biden to abandon his re-election bid. Republicans are among those speculating about who might replace him on November's ballot to face their nominee, former President Donald Trump. VOA's chief national correspondent Stephen Harmon was at this week's Republican National Convention in Milwaukee and filed this report.
One of the chants at the Republican National Convention, Joe must go. Joe does go, bowing to pressure from his own party ahead of next month's Democratic National Convention. Republicans have predictions about who would take his place.
According to the rules, if they follow them, it would be Kamala Harris until they got to convention, and then they might broker.
The brokering that Arizona Republican Lori Klein Corbin references is an open convention with more than one round of voting. The last time the Democrats had to do that and having it result in a general election victory was 1932 with the election of Franklin Roosevelt. Republicans who were in Milwaukee had some surprising names as to who could emerge as the eventual Democratic nominee.
I think Jill would run. I think she'd run.
That's interesting.
And she would do better than her husband.
That's Rochelle Brooks, an alternate delegate from Texas, who was discussing the possibilities with Delegate Tian Tran from California.
Gavin Newsom is another name after Michelle Obama and Kamala Harris.
Gavin Newsom is the governor of California. Michelle Obama, the wife of former President Barack Obama, has adamantly and repeatedly stated she has no interest in being a politician. Vice President Kamala Harris is seen as the most likely replacement for Biden by such Republicans as Alan Swain, the party's nominee for a congressional seat in North Carolina.
I think because of the financials and the last minute, if they do make a change, it's probably going to be Kamala Harris, the VP, and she'll have to pick a running mate. My prediction is it'll probably be the Michigan governor, Governor Whitmer.
The last sitting U.S. president who decided not to run for a second term was the Democratic Party's Lyndon Johnson amid the Vietnam War in 1968. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee.
And this is the time for us to hear from you, our listeners, what you think about this program, what we should do better, and what we should avoid. We start with the listener who did not mention his or her name. The person writes, the withdrawal of the SPLM from the Nairobi talks means that both the government and the SPLM in opposition are misusing resources of South Sudan, and they are doing nothing there. Another listener writes, I am Orato, David Orato from Torit, Eastern Equatorial State. Thanks for voicing the views of South Sudanese. Indeed, Tanza, on behalf of millions of South Sudanese and on my own behalf, allow me to comment on the faith of education system in South Sudan. For sure, our current government does not care on what is supposed to be done on education system, as education is the key of all joy to all. Imagine up to now the results of the Senior 4 examinations for 2023 that were to be released out officially in March this year is still being held hostage due to lack of funds. Samuel Ramo Inyei writes, "Hi, South Sudan in Focus. We should not look at foreigners who are doing business by the roadside as a threat to our women in Juba, but we should apply economic tactics to supply the women with bulk of food products and sell them at a cheaper price to force foreigners to also sell their goods at cheaper prices." Another listener who refers to himself as Dutmajok Kurwai from Rumbek writes, "The peace talks in Nairobi between the holdout groups and the government delegation seem to be buying time. South Sudan civil servants are suffering for months without salary. There is no progress in the peace process. What are our leaders doing?" James Roy Majok from Mayom County in Unity State writes, "Hello, South Sudan in Focus program. The current situation in South Sudan will create more catastrophic events if our leaders do not address it very soon." Thomas Kuntoch in Old Fangak Payam, Fangak County, Jungle State writes, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. The withdrawal of SPLM-IO from the Tumaini initiatives in Kenya is a good action because it undermines the revitalized peace agreement of 2018. We need to pray to God seriously for direction where our country is heading." Another listener who calls himself Natalie Guya from Yambio writes, "We South Sudanese are frustrated with the economic situation in the country. The economic situation is worsening every day and time. South Sudan government needs to do something urgently before the situation of the country worsens." Peter Goch Anyang Majongdul in Block 3 of Balltown writes, "Dear Tanza, the idea by IO to call off its delegation from the Tumaini Initiative in Nairobi is an indication that leaders are not ready for peace to reign in the country. I urge other parties to continue with negotiations in order to end days and months of unsubscribed suffering on the citizens of South Sudan. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the VOA management or the South Sudan in Focus." Keep your comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We shall sample some of your comments every Friday. And that's all we had on our menu for this Friday, July 19, 2024. When I leave you with the song "Say Yo" by Fally Ipupa. We have been listening to Fally Ipupa, one of the finest artists from Africa, and the song "Say Yo." I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Capacita mote mana na bolingo me satura ya mode bébé. Espace insuffisant pour d'autres amours.
ekosenga na efase yo mpo mosusu aremplace kasi moye ya koefase yo na motema na ngai ezali te monamo ozali atome moko ya oxygène oyo ezangaki na deux atome ya hydrogène mpo esala mai polose la vie dance love tu es ma tu es ma vie. L'amour éternel pour la vie, je te comprends, tu me comprends, on se comprend.